Again, Medical Education Podcast listeners, this is Kevin Eva, the editor-in-chief of the journal. Today, reaching across the globe to the Netherlands. I'm going to speak in a moment with Sven Skapkens, who is a postdoctoral researcher at Erasmus University Medical Center in Rotterdam, the Netherlands. He has a paper coming out in the March 2024 issue of Medical Education called "Oh Yes, That Is Reflection, Using Discursive Psychology to Describe How GP Registrars Construct Reflection." Sven, first and foremost, welcome. And second, I understand this is part of your PhD work, so congratulations on being so close to the finish line.
Well, hi, Kevin and audience. Yeah, thank you for the invitation to speak about this paper. And indeed, this paper is part of my PhD manuscript that I'll be defending in May of this year. It's quite exciting that it is already published and that I'm allowed to talk about it with you.
Very exciting. Oh, and so let's actually start by stepping back and talking about the entirety of your PhD, not to make this an early defense, but can you tell us a bit about the full context and what you've been focused upon for that work?
Sure. I'll mention some of the important team members first before I do so. So my main supervisor is Patrick Bindels, the professor at the GP Medical Education Research Institute at Erasmus University. And my daily supervisors are Mario Veen and Anna Delacroix, and they're also co-authoring this paper. So this is the core team who are conduct the research with me and supervising and helping me. Generally, the PhD is about doing reflection in practice at the GP Specialty Training Institute. So the training institute is quite special in the Netherlands in the sense that reflection has been established as a kind of means for, you know, dealing with your experiences during your work at the GP practice as a trainee. And the GP Institute has been kind of dealing with reflection since the 1970s already. So that's an interesting context to study reflection, since we don't have to set up pilots or anything. So there's a lot of it around. Nonetheless, there's quite a few questions that still remain also in this institute, what it means to reflect, particularly in group reflection sessions or during supervisor meetings between a GP supervisor and a GP trainee. And we were wondering mainly, what does it mean to reflect in practice? What does it look like when people start talking to each other when they say they are in a reflective setting, so to say? And part of figuring out what that means is also asking them, eliciting the participant perspective, so to say, of what it means for them to reflect and how they construct this notion of reflection, instead of us, you know, coming in with like, okay, these are the models of reflection. We'll just record a couple of your reflection sessions and deductively assess if you reflect or not. Like, we try to bracket those models for the moment and just start recording and start, you know, noticing the pervasive tendencies, speech patterns, way of constructing reflection in those various settings. So
that's great. And I have to ask you, though, even within Erasmus, I know different research groups have used this term reflection in very different ways. So again, with more specific to your context and sorts of activities you've just described, what are people encouraged to do and how are you defining reflection in your work?
Practically speaking, what I've been looking at as the sort of primary data set is not these focus groups. These are kind of adjacent to this primary data set. The primary data set is the moment. It's usually one day in the week that a fixed group of, say, 10 to 12 GP trainees come back to the institute. And in the morning, usually at the beginning of their training day at the institute, they come together and start what they call learning from experience sessions or group reflection sessions. And the idea is that there's two supervisors present or two teachers present. One usually has a communication or psychology background or a therapy background, and the other has a GP background. And that group for a year long, both in year one, two, and three, that make up the whole of the specialty training for GPs in the Netherlands, they stay together for this whole 1 year, and every week they go through these moments of speaking about an hour to an hour and a half with each other and exchanging any kind of experience that was relevant to them. So in that regard, the floor is rather open. And that is a main chunk of the reflective educational actions that they perform at the Institute. There are other reflection activities as well. And another part of the reflection activities that happen at the GP practice, where they are the other days of the week, there they have regular conversations with their supervisor. And they also consider that reflective conversations. So in that way, I am looking at that setting. And to answer your second question, how do I define reflection, or how do they define reflection? Well, that is actually the complication a little bit, because we find that when we speak to them, there's this sort of variety of what they think that reflection means. I think this is also present in the current literature about reflection a little bit. So we deliberately bracketed them, or tried to stay away from predefining what reflection entails, and rather trying to see what the patterns are when they say they are in the reflective setting.
So that brings me to this particular project. What was the research question that you were trying to address in this piece of work?
Yeah, so simply stated, we hoped to understand how the GPs in training based in the GP Specialty Institute, where this reflection practice has been institutionalized over many years already. And in that setting, we wondered how they constructed reflection. And the word constructed or construction is a little bit odd here, but that is rooted in our kind of methodological outlook. Namely, we use discursive psychology, which is a particular methodology to look at how psychological concepts such as reflection are used in conversation, in social interaction, and how they come to be in social interaction, you know, what they mean in social interaction. So we're not asking the GPs in training with this research question, please give us a definition of reflection. Rather, we're trying to tease out how they speak about reflection. And from how they speak about reflection, we try to understand their presuppositions, the sort of underlying norms and values that they have regarding their education and the position of reflection therein. So we're not looking for the correct or their typical definition, but we're just trying to see how they construct the reality of what reflection means for them through the discourse that they use. And in this case, the focus group was this place where they could have a little bit of discourse about, you know, this phenomenon.
So I was just going to ask, so what were the data on which you performed that analysis? So was focus group conversations prompted to talk about these experiences?
Exactly. So on the one hand, this is indeed a prompted setting, because, of course, we would like to look at natural data, which is also what we're doing. We've recorded quite a few of these group reflection sessions, but we have about 40 of them across the 8 Dutch GP institutes. But hardly ever do they mention the word reflection or anything, right? They're just doing reflection. Mm-hmm. Hence also my main research question of my PhD is, what does reflection in practice look like when you do it? And we think that in the social interaction, you build what reflection entails. And this might be, I don't want to say richer than just giving a very concise or precise definition, because once you start looking at the practices, looking at the language that they use in order to deal with, you know, the issues that they're talking about in a reflexive way, that immediately you're coloring beyond the lines, so to say, of your little illustration.
Well, Richard does seem like a fair word, at least to my read, because you uncovered a variety of complexities and nuance and things in the way that people were speaking of these experiences. So what of the observations that you made struck you as most insight-provoking or surprising or exciting to you, given how much you've done in this area already?
So, of course, I moved through the Institute, quite literally. I'm in the hallways. I meet the teachers. I meet the GPs in training. And I always noticed that they speak rather in nuanced terms about what reflection entails in their education. And this was striking in the data that we found. There's an odd kind of balancing act that they try to perform. Now, we can say that this is also partially maybe because of a safety issue. You're not just outright going to, you know, slam your institute and say like, all reflection is crap. You know, like that's probably not going to happen since we're also conducting these focus group discourse in the institute. However, given this limitation, there is a lot of intricate work that's being done by these GP trainees to emphasize on the one hand how important reflection to them is, while on the other hand having a little disclaimer like, yeah, but you know, like there's also issues. So they're trying to say two things at the same time, or pull off this balancing act and try to formulate a kind of nuanced construction about what reflection entails without saying it's just good or it's just crap. That was very intriguing to see how they come up with what these constructions were.
And appreciating those sorts of tensions, I think, is likely one of the main values coming from this work. It seems more realistic. Nothing is ever all good or all bad in education settings. And so I wonder if you can say a bit more, thinking in terms of if others were trying to support learners with these sorts of activities, how did your participants describe negotiating the balance between the good and the bad and everything in between?
Yeah, so I think what we took from them is that there is this kind of diversity about appreciating what is good or bad about reflection. So for some, doing a particular reflective action works really well, whereas for someone else, that same kind of action doesn't really work for whatever reason, right? And that's what they were negotiating about. And that was very interesting to see, because then you realize that reflection all of a sudden does not become a kind of one size fits all, and this is the ideal method or the ideal reflective activity that you should do because this will yield certain effects, or, you know, help learners answer typical learning questions that they might have. In that sense, it was more about a kind of collage of options. It was a kind of sampling card that they provided me with and that they gave insight in by talking about how they were doing reflection activities. Mm-hmm. And I think I've took this sampling card at heart. It's like, okay, maybe we should think about helping them reflect by giving them also maybe a space to experience and also experiment with different ways of reflecting. Because then as an institute, you convey that you think that reflection is important because you're giving that space and you're asking them to do all these activities, but you're not forcing them into one particular way of doing reflection and just saying, yeah, this is just what the science says and this is the most effective way. Whereas they seem to say, well, sometimes this is effective, sometimes that's effective for me. It also depends through time. So I was thinking along the lines of, okay, what if we can create this education as a kind of experimental space of reflection within a broader culture of reflection, where reflection then, generally speaking, is established as something valuable.
And that just reminds me of a variety of other contexts. I've heard people express misgivings about reflection because it can feel artificial and it can feel like people are being performative rather than actually engaging in a genuine learning activity. And
that's also what they say in the focus groups. Yeah.
And what you're saying suggests to me that at least in some circumstances, that might be because it's being imposed upon them in a way that isn't natural and that overshoots the goals of reflection. And so, again, with all the background of the risks of implementing poorly, if you were to offer advice to a curriculum designer or to a teacher who's trying to make reflective activities as good as they can be for the benefits of their students, what would your first priority be in terms of offering them guidance?
All right. I would try to, first of all, make clear what you ask of them and why you ask it. So there is a kind of, and this is also being discussed in the literature already, like reflection literacy seems to help. This is also part of what we try to catch in the titles, like, oh, yes, that's also a reflection. This is the kind of, you know, expression of surprise of one of the participants. And this really happened in the focus groups. So first of all, I would advise curriculum designers to really carefully try to formulate why you're doing reflection or asking them to do certain reflection activities. And more importantly, try to find ways to carve out a space for them to experiment with different types of reflection. And I hope that somehow within a curriculum, you can create this space of experimentation. For instance, you know, at the beginning of a curriculum, when students are, for instance, new to the studies, then, you know, you might want to have a kind of, let's say, more guided approach. Like, okay, this week, we're going to have more group reflection activities. Next week, I will ask you to write a reflection report. In week three, we're going to go to a museum and look at some paintings and start talking about our experience there. Of course, each, let's say, medium or each way of reflection might yield different things, but I think that's also kind of the point of this experimentation, right? So each and every type has its benefits and disadvantages, but it might also have its a different appeal to the various students. And in that sense, you could show them this sample card, kind of guide it, you know, through the curriculum. And towards the end, if you ask people to reflect that they're aware of this sample card and that they could select like, yeah, I'm really fond of writing reflection reports. There was one person, one participant in our data who said like, this is really helpful to me. And almost all the other ones are like, no, like, God, no, I don't want to do that. I'd rather just talk to each other, you know, like, and that's also okay then, right? So that's how I kind of hope to make this article kind of land. Like, can we find ways to open it up for those who need to reflect, to experiment with, you know, different ways of how you could reflect?
Yeah, it's very sound advice and a good place for us to end, because I think that's one of the real strengths of your paper is it provides people with a variety of ideas if they look for them in terms of how to engage in that sort of experimentation and the need to remain engaged to make adjustments. If an experiment isn't working, how do you pivot to plan B or C or D? So those are details I think we're going to have to leave for people to get out of the paper itself.
Sure.
So to enable that, I'm just going to remind them that the title is, Oh Yes, That's Also Reflection, Using Discursive Psychology to Describe How GPU Registrars Construct Reflection. Sven Skopkins is the first author, and it is in the March 2024 issue of Medical Education. So Sven, thanks for the insights you provided and for the work, and only a couple months to go before your defense. So good luck. I'm sure we'll be congratulating you very soon.
Thank you so much.